All right, welcome back to the Forfeit Fatherhood Podcast, a podcast for fathers by fathers, where we talk about the four pillars of fatherhood, which are faith, family, finance, and fitness. And I know you guys have been tired of hearing me talk by myself, so I finally got another guest here. And this will start off the kind of series of guests again. So I'm excited. I actually had the privilege of being on this gentleman's live and looking at his feed. He's got lives with a bunch of dope dads. I gotta like go steal some people to talk to. But I'm excited to talk to Jack. Jack, why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself?
All right. Thanks for having me, Rod. I appreciate being here. My name is Jack Noful. I am a retired veteran, full-time RVer, father, husband, born and raised in Cleveland, and now the world's kind of my home. We travel everywhere, and my son is homeschooled. It's in the, under that umbrella, unschooled and world schooled. So we're always traveling and teaching him everything that we can about the world and different cultures. So that's a little something about me.
Yeah. So father, husband, veteran, and author, right? We got to throw that in there. So author of the book.
Totally. Yeah.
Fatherhood, the Art of Love and Leadership. You know, my wife wrote a book as well, and she always, like, when she introduces herself, I'm always like, hey, make sure you tell people you're an author. Like, don't leave that off the table. Like, that's not a small thing. Writing a book's a big deal. So tell us a little bit about that. I mean, I think that's a really important point to start on.
Yeah, and I'm brand new. I just released my book last week. So Fatherhood, the Art of Love and Leadership, like Rod said. It summarizes a lot of tools or skills that fathers should have, or that will build upon skills they already have. So really it's talking about just building that relationship with your kids, being intentional with your time with kids. It'll go through your intentional time spent with them, how to make more of that time, balancing family and work life, your relationship with your partner, and how to balance that within being a parent, right? So, because that's just a whole nother topic where if you're not centered with yourself and then with your partner, it's hard to be centered with your kids. So a lot of the book is just talking about tools that have worked for me and tools that are skills. I should say it's skills because you really have to practice these, right? And that's really what I'm doing. I'm summarizing these skills that are like, hey, if you're talking to your child and you're standing up the whole time facing down, it's kind of like you're dictating to them. Instead, get on a knee, talk to them level, right? And that already changes the entire relationship right there, right? Because the kids are now feeling like, oh, a dad came down. His eyes are looking at my eyes. We're actually talking intimately and building that relationship there. It goes through stuff like that, emotional intelligence, and how we can use that to our advantage. And that's going to be through nonverbal communication, nonverbal communication, because a lot of men or fathers don't pay attention to the nonverbal cues that their kids are giving them, because a lot of times we just spit out whatever's in our mouth, hey, stop doing that, and we're not even looking. So to me, I'm trying to get men, again, be intentional, look at your son, see what they're doing, what's their body language. And so I talk a lot about that, and it's pretty much, it's a very short book. It only should take you about 45 minutes to read the whole book. It's 40 pages, and it's just a bunch of little tools to give fathers. And I give a bunch of summaries in every single chapter of how I use every single tool and what I do for effective communication, what I do for balancing my relationship with my son, how I balance my relationship with my wife. So in summary, it's literally just a book to give fathers can keep the book with them wherever they go, because it's a small book. I did it on purpose to make it small, like a little manual. And that's why I called it a father's manual. So literally you could go in there and be like, hey, well, what skill can I work on? So right after you read that book, you're already utilizing the skills that you read about. And that's really what I want. I just want fathers to step up their game and change what we consider fatherhood and take it to the next generation, be positive influences, and break that generational chain that we've seen a lot happening.
Yeah, man, I like that. So under 40 pages, so there's no excuse for 40 pages, so there's no excuse for us not to read it, right? Like it's not War and Peace, so it's not one of those, right?
Nope.
But I like something you said there, and you talked about fatherhood, and you said it's a skill. I think like when we, depending on our mindset, right? Like we talk about growth mindset, fixed mindset. When we look at something as a skill, skills can be trained, they can be improved upon, they can be grown, and I think, you know, sometimes we'll think of who we are and what we do as kind of fixed, right? Like I'm just not able to be a good father. This is just who I am, right? This is the man I am, and the kids are gonna have to adapt to who I am. And there's some bit of that, right? As a leader and as the adult and the one who understands the world a little bit differently, there is a little bit of that. They have to adapt and adjust and be resilient to the type of man and person and household that you have. But then also, you have to have the ability to grow and get better and figure out where your strengths and your weaknesses are and improve on those. And I think having a manual, right, that I could refer back to where I don't have to read, you know, 47 pages to figure out how to work on my communication. I can go in, I can hit a few bullet points or a couple pages, and I'm like, okay, let me go back in the room and get this done. I think that's really, really cool, man. What kind of led you to writing the book?
This is a funny story. I was at the playground. So once I retired from the military, I kind of became the stay-at-home dad, right? My wife is an entrepreneur, so she does work from home. So that's why I say kind of. Most of the time, I was with him. I would take him to the library for the readings, and I'd take him to the playgrounds to meet up with different dads and moms. And one dad and I kind of start talking. I'd see him weekly, but you'd watch his energy change as I came around. Like, oh man, Jack's back. You know, and I understand, like, I can be a little bit intense sometimes to other fathers because I'm very, very passionate about fatherhood. Because I didn't grow up a father. I didn't grow up with any of this. So all of this is, I'm breaking a generational change right away. You know, that I want to say curse, but I don't want to say curse. You know, I'm still proud of my ancestors and the path that got me here. So I was at the playground, and this father was just having a difficult time. He had a 1 year old, and he had his son who was 5 years old. And so my son was playing with his son, and he was watching the baby, and I went over and I was playing with the kids, and he just kept yelling for his dad, "Dad, come play with me, Dad, come play with me," right? And the dad was just sitting there, a little overweight and not motivated, doesn't say nice things to his kid. And I was just like, man, this is not how it's supposed to be. That's not the father I would want. And you know, it's like a lot of times if we just change our perspective and put ourselves in kids' shoes, would we want that father? And this is literally the precipice of me writing the book, is that I watched his body language to his son. I watched the way he spoke down at his son. And then when I addressed it, it kind of boiled over. I said, "Hey man, are you okay?" So I was going at it at a softer level too. I wasn't trying to come at him and attack him because he already knew who I was. And he was prior service too, but National Guard. So, you know, a lot of times those active duty guys don't give them the credit they deserve. And I told him, "Hey man, you all right? Is everything good at home? How's everything with the family?" And just making conversation and trying to get him to talk, right?
Yeah.
Really feel his emotions and give me them. And that's all I wanted. I just wanted him to know that, hey, I'm here to just listen. I won't give you any feedback if you don't want it. Instead, when I said those questions to him, he blew up on me. He said, "I can't do a damn thing right. I can't make lunches for all the kids. I can't take care of my wife. I can't take care of the house. I'm supposed to be building this and doing this." The guy just went off the chain. And I said, "Man, I'm sorry that you're going through that and you're having these struggles. You know, if you'd like some help, I'm here, man." And he said, "I can't do the things that you're doing. I don't even know how you're doing it." And he grabbed all his stuff and he looked at his son that I was playing with earlier. And he said, "We're getting the hell out of here," right? Really angry, really mean, very bad energy. I mean, that's stuff the kids feel, right? I mean, my own son felt that. He said, "What happened, Dad?" I said, "Well, you know, he doesn't have a regulated nervous system. He doesn't know how to do that breath work that you've been learning since you were born, buddy. You know, that's why we take these deep breaths, so we can regulate first." And that's what it came down to. I go, man, it's that simple. This guy doesn't know how to regulate. And so a lot of my book, there's a whole chapter on just like men learning to take a step back. And it's a chapter on discipline. And really, I wrote about this guy of like, hey, man, take a step back, take a breath. The meditation is not just like you sit there for 40 minutes and you breathe over and over. There's meditation that's just a one breath meditation. Just taking that deep breath, it just gives us that little bit of time to realign and recenter so we can use our words properly, right? Because language is super, super important to children when we're talking to them. And this guy triggered me to write a short manual. And that's literally what's in my head. I go, I need to write something that's short. If he's feeling overwhelmed, how would an overwhelmed father be able to learn from me? And it's not from writing a big book. I knew that. And I didn't have it in me to write a big book at that time. I was just like, and I have 5 chapters that I didn't put in this book. I just summarized it quickly. And I made it so this guy who I literally was talking to at the playground would say, all right, you know, I actually have time to read a 30-minute, hour book and walk away with some maybe new skills. And so that's really what caused me to write this book is this one guy. I felt so bad for him that I couldn't help him. And I go, there has to be a way I can help him and other fathers like him. And so a short manual came out, a father's manual, Fatherhood, the Art of Love and Leadership. And I really wanted to split it into those two categories, love and leadership, because I think those are two very important categories to go through for men.
Yeah, I agree. I agree. You touched on something there that I think is really, really important. We talked about regulation and self-regulation and that kind of being a really big part of emotional intelligence. And it's really interesting. We talk about in March, I did like a whole thing. The whole month was dedicated towards kind of discovering or finding a definition for what we consider masculinity to be. And so through podcast interviews, through posts on social media, through back and forth in different fatherhood groups and just kind of nailing down an idea. And one of the things that came up initially was this idea of being too emotional, right? Or acting with emotions or reacting off emotions. And that's one of the things that guys kept saying, like, that's a female trait, right? Being emotional is a female trait. But I think when we say being emotional, we give it this negative connotation because we don't have the tools and the resources to be emotionally disciplined, to have some regulation of our emotions, to be able to control how we feel or really even understand how we feel. And so then we just react instead of respond, which is something that I was better able to do through things like meditation, where I have some clarity of mind and I have some peace of mind where I can take a pause and respond instead of react. And I think that's something that's really, really important. So I'm glad you put that in the book, because that regulation piece is something that causes a lot of us to do things that we would regret later on, because we're just acting in the moment without any context of the bigger picture, right? Like that would have been a great opportunity for that guy to just like to give it to you, right? Pour it out, because it obviously was boiling up inside of him. But to like pour that out and then get the resources and be able to have a somebody to talk to about it, right? Because the reason why it's boiling up and spilling out in that moment is because you have no other outlets or resources to kind of push it down a little bit. And so that would have been a great opportunity. But when we lack emotional intelligence or emotional discipline, we just spaz out and then we disappear, and that's just who we are, right? So first of all, I've got to get a copy of the book. And before we leave, you got to make sure we let everybody else know how to get a copy of the book.
Absolutely.
But something you mentioned there, and this is something that I'd like to talk about on the podcast. And if you can stop me if you don't want to talk about it, I think a lot of times we talk about fatherhood in terms of when we become a father, like our fatherhood journey begins there. But in reality, our fatherhood journey begins with our own father, and how we are fathered and how we're parented or in a lot of cases not fathered or not parented. It kind of echoes in how we father or parent. How was your relationship with your dad?
I have no problem talking about this at all.
Okay.
So my dad was there till I was 4, and I remember it was the early 80s, and the only memory I really have of him being around was when he hit me with a golf club at 4 years old. Oh, wow. And this is when I was living in Cleveland growing up. And I remember that clearly, that stuck in my head forever. So obviously it was a traumatic event for me, right? And That's why I knew of my father. I didn't see him then for the next 7 years. And then after that, he kind of showed up and I'd see him on holidays. And then my mom allowed him to have some weekends because he was getting into a lot of drugs and alcohol and just, you know, just a bad lifestyle. And I had a stepfather who stepped up right around 11 years old. He came and I grew really, really close with him. And he became more my surrogate father than my father. I never, ever was able to build a relationship with my dad. He was very closed-minded and all he cared about was sports. And so like, if you wanted to talk Cleveland Indians, Cleveland Browns, Ohio State Buckeyes, that's the man to go to. That's all he cared about is those three teams. And it was very closed-minded. As I was growing as a man, I was like, that's not the man I want to be. I don't want to be the man who just sits and talks sports all day. You know, because I feel like it's Roman times where they're trying to distract us with the Spartans fighting and all this, or gladiators, I meant, fighting.
Yeah.
And that's what sports is often. And don't get me wrong, I love sports. I played sports. And it just wasn't the father I was looking for. But my stepdad now, when he showed up, it was the father I was looking for. He was taking me on hikes every single weekend. We'd wake up, he bought some land, and he is on weekends, same thing. Let's wake up and we're going to go sickle the land. People don't even know what sickle is. I'm over here, couldn't get a weed whacker because the weeds were so big. You had to use this big old Grim Reaper sickle.
The Grim Reaper,
and knock the stuff down. So I was doing that as a 11-year-old kid, and my friends would all make fun of me. You're out here learning all about nature. He was teaching me how to garden. Skills that were really great for life, right? When my car would break down, my stepfather would be like, hey, you have to get underneath there and take it apart. I'll make sure you don't mess everything up. And that's what we did. So I had a great stepfather too. Here's where it all changed. My mom died when I was 22 and it just broke everything apart. My stepfather and I lost that relationship. And so it gave me a chance to look back, especially now. Last year, I wrote him a letter about my feelings and I got nothing in return. But I saw him recently and he didn't say anything about it. And so it was sad because I'm like, as a father myself, I never would want to lose that bond. So all these things I've learned from my dad, or didn't learn from my dad and learned from my stepfather, it came to a point of like, all I needed was your attention. I just needed you to be there in the most important times of my life. And you weren't. Neither of you were there in the most important times of my life. And so my relationship with fathers, or my two fathers, was just, it was great until it wasn't. And my real father, no relationship ever. My stepfather, like I said, it broke apart. So it really pushed me to become a better man eventually. After my 20s, I got through some of the things. And when my son was born, it just made me re-question everything. And actually, there's a whole chapter on this in my book too. It's called De-schooling Dad. The idea of de-schooling is to forget everything you learned, use some critical thinking, and decide what's the right path. What do you want for your kid? What outcomes do you want? What's the objective, right? Do you want a solid foundation for your kid and to build them through love and trust and leadership? Or do you want to just go through the motions and say you're a father? And so that's how I've kind of grown, is like, I'm not here to be like my dad's, you know? My real dad was never there. My stepdad just disappeared on me and wasn't there on the most important times of my life. So it's like, now I know what I need to do as a man. I need to step up all the way and never let that ever occur to my son and have those same feelings that I had. Cause that was troublesome for me. It left me alone. It left me, lost. Yeah. I'd say that's probably the best word. I was lost. I had no one to turn to ever on the most important times, when my mom died, my father died, my stepmom died. It was like all these people, my grandfather died, my uncle died. We've had so many deaths go on. And it's just like, no one was ever there. And now I have a great wife. I have a great family. And like I said, my mother-in-law is my closest family now, outside my intimate circle. So I was really raised up by my mom and my two sisters. So I grew up with that feminine energy, you know, and I didn't have the balance of the masculine energy. And don't get me wrong, I grew that through time, being in sports, being the captain of teams, being a bricklayer, being in the military and being a leader. So I did grow the masculine side and have balanced myself. And I think that's an important part that I do as a father now, that I wish my fathers would have done and said, hey, it's okay to have this masculine side, like my stepfather was doing, right? He was like, hey, here, do yard work, do the weeds, cut the grass, do all this yard work, right? And then fix your car. This is what men do. They get jobs that aren't fun and they pay the bills. All right, cool. What about my emotions? What am I supposed to do with my emotions? Luckily, I had a mom that was awesome. And my mom would just be like, hey, cry. If you need to cry, just cry. Get it out and get over it. And so it's just, I didn't have the complete father. And that's and that's what I'm striving for, right? Is to be a complete father. And I'll never be perfect, but my goal is never to be like that.
There you go. Okay. All right. I mean, I think a lot of us experience that, you know, that lack of balance, right? Like, because I think until our generation or until like we are where we are now, dads of the past were like, they had some very clearly defined roles, I think, in it, and being an emotional support to you wasn't it. Like, you know what I mean? Yeah. Like that wasn't in the job description. That was not in the JD. It was like, protect, provide, rough you up a little bit, tell you to throw some dirt on it, stop crying. You know, that was kind of it, right? And it wasn't, you know, talk to you about how you're feeling. Like, feeling, like, boy, if you don't get up, and you know what I mean? It was, the feelings thing didn't really start happening on a larger scale until, you know, we became parents, right? And now we're like you said, trying to be a complete dad, right? I think a lot of the nurturing and the child rearing was kind of left up to moms or the female counterparts in the family, and dads were still going out to hunt, right? We're hunting and gathering and trying to go bring home the bacon. Right. And then mom had to take care of everything inside the house. But I think now we're realizing as men that we are capable of being a nurturing component as well. Right. We're going to provide the strength. We're going to provide all of the same things that we were able to provide in previous generations. But there's so much more that we can do. Right. And we're stepping up to the plate to try to rise to the challenge. And I think it's going to be, I mean, here's the thing. And me and my wife talk about this all the time. It's like, we're raising kids. We don't know, right? We just don't know. Like, we think we're doing all the right things, right? Like, we're trying to do all the right things, but we won't know for another 20 years or so, right? Like, we won't know until they're adults and they're grownups and like, all right, fingers crossed. All right. Just make sure that we did it right. Or are we going to end up on a couch somewhere in parent kid therapy? They're talking about something they said or did 20 years ago. So we just try to do our best. But I think being a complete father and trying to be a complete man is really important. What would you say, like, if we were to kind of quantify that, like, what would a complete father be?
I believe, and almost a complete father can be masculine, right? Like, the same definition almost is like, take care of yourself, take care of your health first. First, you have to always take care of you. I cannot help my wife or my son without me being balanced, me being healthy. I mean, that's number one. You have to take care of your own health. Understand what foods you're eating. Understand what water you're even drinking. I mean, like, the basics, right? Take care of you and take some time for yourself. Work out, do that first. Number one, take care of you. Number two, read some books. And I understand that one of my best friends I was just talking to in Cleveland, he's like, I've never read a book. I'm going to die that way. He's proud of it. I'm like, why though? Why? When I read, I'm getting knowledge that I didn't have before. No matter what I read, I always walk away from a book. And I'm like, all right, I can start using this information right now. So I think, I won't say read, but educate yourself, right? Everyone needs to have some kind of education and learn different things, because that's where critical thinking comes in. You take all this information and then you decide what's probably best for my family. Three, have a solid foundation with your partner. And I don't care how that looks, but you guys need to be a team. And in my house, my son at 18 months, he was already saying teamwork makes the dream work, right? And it's because we're a team, we're a unit. And if we're cleaning up, we always say stuff like, on this farm, we all help each other, right? And we don't have a farm or anything, but it's just like, it's sayings that like keep us together. Like, hey, I'm accountable for you, you're accountable for me. And so my wife and I, we sat down and we jotted down on paper how we wanted a parent, what we thought would be the best. All of that's gone. It was like that first edition's gone, because we keep leveling up to being more narrow of what we really want. What do we want from our son, right? And so instead of having this big broad picture, now we really focused it in and understand like what our parenting skills are and what we want from him. So we're a real team. We understand when he's somewhere, I'll say, hey, I have eyes on, and she doesn't have to pay attention. If I lose, I'll be like, hey, I don't have eyes on. We're always communicating. So build that communication also with your partner. That's a big one. And step four, build the relationship with your kids. I understand a lot of fathers will be like, dude, I've had a relationship with my son. I was there when he was born. What does that even mean? I was there too. You know, and it's like, build the relationship. Take the time. If you're not working, or you're called off work, or it's bad weather, you get to stay home, put your phone down. Don't even think about work. Build that relationship with your kid. Get down and dirty with them when they're outside and they're playing. My son, sometimes, you know, I work from my phone, and I'm like, dad, put your phone down. And once my son says that, the phone's down. I don't care who I'm talking to. If anyone's calling me, I put the phone down. And don't get me wrong, there's times where it's a super important call and I'll be like, dude, give me 3 minutes and I got you. But I communicated to him, and we're always building that relationship, him and I. And so I think that's important too. Just make sure you're building relationships with both your entire family, because that's an ongoing thing. It's not like I built it when he was born to 1 year's old, because he's changing. It means I have to change. So as we're building the relationship together now, like a 1 year old, I communicate different than a 3 year old, and your kids are older. So you're not communicating the same as when they were three. You know what I mean? So right. We always have to advance and move with them. And so that relationship is ongoing forever until they're gone. And then it's like, hey, now I have to a whole nother system I have to build with them, because I have to trust them and to have their back is what I'm saying. Yeah, I'd say that those four things are the big that I look at.
I like that. You know, I've heard dads, like, especially because I work with a lot of like new dads. I've heard them talk about like, I was there when he was born, like that. And that's really, I mean, obviously I suggest that everybody that has the opportunity to be in the room when your child is born, that you're there. It's a once in a lifetime. Even if you have multiple kids, every time is a special occasion, right? But just being there is not having really, it's the start of the relationship, right? Like, cause that initial bond that you feel when you see your kid, that emotional, that overwhelming emotion that you feel is super, super important. Yes. But I would say it's like being a fan at the Super Bowl, right? Like, you're there, right? Like, that's a big moment and it's awesome to be at the Super Bowl, but there's no relationship between you and the teams, right? Like, the team is like, they're winning the Super Bowl. The kid is just being born. They're going to be born whether you're in the room or not, right? So you have to go beyond just being there, just showing up to a great event. You got to get in there. You got to get on the field, right? You got to do the dirty work. You got to run the gassers. Like, you got to get out there and go to the meetings. Like, you have to do all these things that really build the relationship and build the bond, right? You can't just show up to the major events, show up at the games or things like that. Those are great, great, great things to do, but it's got to be some dirty work, some deeper understanding between you, your partner and you and the kid, right? That I think that builds the complete father. And I agree with the four things that you said. I think those four are really, really important. So I had so we talk about, like, your book is Love and Leadership, right? And you were in the military. Were you in a leadership position in the military?
Yes.
Okay. Do you bring some of that into your parenting style? Are you, cause people will be like, oh, I got a military dad, right? And that's either got positive or negative, like, reference when you talk about it. But do you find yourself, a little bit more of, a military dad?
I wouldn't say I'm a military dad. Any of my soldiers who had me, and it's right around like 600 I had total. They would always say, like, sir, you're not really like military, are you? You're kind of like a discipline hippie. That's what they would always call me, this discipline hippie. And I'd say, you know, I just never was a person for war. I didn't, and I've been to war, and I'm happy I actually went and had that experience, because it's very eye-opening. It really changed my life, actually. Going to war was just like, wow, people live this way. People are shooting at me. I'm in firefights. It was wild, right? But it still never grew on me, I thought. And as I got years in, and I was in 11, 12 years, all of a sudden I started having these, we'll say disciplines that just stuck with me. I still wake up at like 4:30 in the morning. I don't want to. I could wake up at 5:30 and have no problem. But it's just, I've been doing it for so long, I still wake up at that time. And then my wife will always say, there'll be certain things I'm like, all right, we have to do this, this, and this. And I'll put things in step order for my son. I'll be like, all right, step one, step two, step three. That's very military. But also, it's very beneficial. My son really likes it. So I'll be like, step one, we're going to clean up the toys. Step two, you have 30 minutes of TV. Step three, we're going to get dressed. Step four, we're out the door, and we're going to go to the playground. Right? And then he'll be like, Dad, what's step two again? And then he memorizes it every time. So my wife will say that came from the military, but I think that's a useful tool. Now, other times, I'll be like super strict on him. And that's where my wife, Simone, will step up and be like, hey, stop being military. So she does catch me on certain things. But I'd say for the most part, I'm not. And now it's been a year since I've been out. And I'm losing it faster than I thought I was going to. Like, I'm losing the acronyms and all the jargon that I used. And now my son is learning military time. So he learns the 24-hour clock. It just makes more sense. I've been all over the world. Most people around the world know both clocks. So we're starting him off with the 24-hour clock, and then we'll teach him the 12, the AM, PM. So I'd say there is part of me that has that discipline left from the military, where it's like, when I wake up, I hit the gym. I have to work out like I used to. I have to wake up early. And when I come home, I like to have him work out. So he starts getting these positive habits, right? Where, hey, all right, when I wake up, I feel better after getting this workout in. That's me. I have friends who love working out at night, and that's their thing. And so my son may change that, but that's very military. You know, you wake up, you work out. And besides that, into my fathering skills, sometimes I would say it shows up again in my consistency. I'm very consistent. If I say I'm going, he's going to have some kind of consequences. And we don't do like timeouts or spank. We don't believe in any of that stuff. And there's a chapter actually on that, on like discipline for children. And what we do is, if I say this is the consequence, hey, if you get out of your bed one more time because you keep jumping out of bed and it's sleep time, tomorrow you get no TV. I hold that accountable, right? And in the military, that's the same thing. So that's just a habit, though, I think it's good for all fathers. So it's like, when you ask that question, I'm like, yes, I learned this from the military, but I think all fathers, it's a good trade. And the ones that are bad, my wife always catches me on. And she'll just tell me, hey, stop it. You don't need to be so military. And yeah, so there's times, but it's getting less and less that she's catching me.
Yeah. I heard you say eyes on earlier, and I was like, oh, that's military for sure. Like, normal civilians aren't saying eyes on. It's like, can you see the kids? Like, but eyes on, yeah, for sure. It's funny because you know, doing the podcast, I've talked to several guys who are military, Marines, or just kind of all over the place in the armed services. You can hear some of that kind of military background and how they father, and like the discipline part of it is one of those things. Some of the, like you said, some of the jargon and the way they talk about things. And then you have a guy every once in a while say like 0500 or something like that, right? And we just kind of let it slip out just because you're so used to it. But I don't think it's like, obviously anything you do in excess can be a negative thing, right? Like, you're drinking water right now. Too much water could kill you, right? Like, you could drink water and poison yourself, right? But we can all agree that water is good for you. Right. In the right doses, water is extremely important and a necessary thing to have. And I think discipline's one of those things, right? Too much discipline can be too much, right? But there has to be a level of it. And I think that, you know, having the discipline of the military, I think those are really, if you use it correctly, right? If you use it in the right doses, that's a, like having steps, right? I think it's really cool, for a child, right? Because they kind of know what the expectations are, right? And then they can kind of self-govern a little bit, right? Because once I finish step one, I know what step two is. Like, I'm not lost. I know what to do next, right? And now I can just kind of get into the next thing, and it gives them a sense of order and direction. I think we can argue that the way the school system is now is not the best, right? But I think one of the things that we get from the school system is organization, right? There's a time for everything, right? Like math is math time and English is English time. And like everything is kind of ordered in that way. And so kids can kind of thrive a little bit because you can focus, you can singularly focus on something and get it done or get close to completion before you move on to something else. I think when we just let things kind of just be like, whatever, right? Like, these are all the things we have to do today. There's no order to them. Just throw them at you, right? And you got to figure out how to do it. It's okay for an adult because we have the resources and the tools to kind of navigate that a little better. But for a kid, just give me one task at a time. Like, you can tell me all of them, but let me just knock out number one first, right? And then from number one, I can go to number two. And it allows me to be really successful and to stack successes, which I think in the long term sets them up to kind of have more of a positive outlook of themselves, like better self-esteem, right? Because I did step one, right? I knocked step one out. And then I went to dad and he smiled because I asked him what step two was. And now I knocked, you know, it's all these little things that I don't think we think about when we think about discipline, right? We talk about discipline and we immediately think of somebody's getting in trouble.
Yeah, right? And you know, like you said something there that was really important. It's like when he finishes step one, is often I give him praise, right? I'm like, hey man, give me a fist bump. Good job with step one's done. Way to be disciplined and take care of cleaning up your toys. That's what we do. Step two, what are we doing? And then I, you know, it's that feedback. You don't give a kid a task and don't ask for feedback. So you give him the task and you ask him to repeat it, right? Again, that's military and it's ingrained in you to do that. So like as I delegate something, hey, what did I just say? I say, check, let's see what you get if you were listening, right?
Right.
And I do that with my son often. So he'll be like, oh, well, step two, dad's this. Let's go, man. Another fist bump. You know, just like you said, it just builds that self-esteem and their confidence. And yeah, it's a great tool that we've used for sure.
Yeah. And I think in terms of terms that kind of get thrown around and get mixed up and confused, and I think discipline and punishment are two of those terms. I think they're very separate and very different things, right? I think punishment is like a consequence, right? Something that happens because something else happened. I think discipline is a totally different thing. And I think we use the word discipline to describe punishment sometimes. And that's, I think, where the negative outlook on discipline is. I think discipline is a very important thing for men, for families, for children, right? There has to be some order of the way we do things. There has to be some guiding principles. And I think there's a discipline helps you stay on path to that. Punishment also has to be there. When people fall off track, there has to be some consequence to their actions because that's what the world's going to give them, right? We have to be able to teach them in a safe space. When you don't follow the orders or you don't do what you're supposed to do, there's the potential that something's going to come up that is going to be something you don't like, right? And you have to be able to navigate that as well, right? And I think as parents, we have to do a better job of separating the two, but then also do a better job of being disciplined ourselves in the way that we conduct ourselves and around our children.
Yeah, I agree and I disagree on that.
Okay,
go for it. Because we don't use the word punishment.
Love
we
it.
Do, in my book, I actually talk about both disciplines because so many people do that, right? Discipline self and disciplining kids. So I actually hit both in the book, all under disciplined dads. And so if you use it that way, you know, like, hey, I'm disciplining my son this way. I don't talk to him like that though. So kind of, that's why I'm saying I agree and I disagree because I don't use the word punishment though either. I use the word that you did say though, consequence. And so I'll be like, buddy, listen, you weren't disciplined just now. So there is a consequence for your actions. So I still tell him like that discipline is self, man. You need to take care of yourself and take care of your toys and take care of whatever you're doing that dad asked you or mom asked you. But since you didn't, the consequence is this. So because we don't really punish, right? It's like, I feel like punish is a harsh word. Like, time to get punished, boy. Come on over here. Go get yourself, you know,
switch.
My belt and a switch. Yeah, you know what I was trying to say. Yeah, exactly. It's like, what is going on? And so I think it's, and that might just be my past, that like I had that word punished and I didn't like it. I don't like the word saying punished to my son. So I frame it in kind of that way, is like, hey, since you weren't disciplined, you now have a consequence.
I like that.
But
like
that, it also gives me a chance to address it. It's like, hey, how do we fix that and stay more disciplined, buddy? And then me and Dustin could talk and he'd be like, oh, I see. I'm sorry, Dad. I don't know if he's really sorry. I think half the time he is. You know, like kids when they say it, it's like sometimes they just want to get to the toy and sometimes they actually are super empathetic or compassionate of what just happened.
Yeah. I think that something that's really cool there too is that you're having the conversation around the consequence, right? And it's not just a consequence levied on them because they did something. You're framing it, letting them know why the consequence is happening, why this is the consequence for this particular action, and then that allows them to process it better, right? Just I always like when I used to get whoopings and I used to have to go get the belt myself, I always thought like on the way to get the belt, I'm like, this, by the time I get back, I'm hoping she's not still mad. Like, I'm going to take my time. You know what I mean? Like, you can't be this mad. Yeah. Let me, I'm slowly, I can't find it. You know, like I got the belt in my hand, but I'm yelling down the hallway. I can't find it. But like, I never understood, like, one, I don't know. It didn't work for me. I think I was a pretty good kid, but I just never understood, like, all right, so you're mad at me because I did something. And you're whooping me because you're mad at me. But you're not really like trying to get me not to do it anymore. You're just mad in the moment, right? Like, I'm just not going to do it because I got in trouble. Like, I don't want to get in trouble again. But I'm not doing it because you got mad. So, like, explain to me why I'm in trouble as opposed to getting a whooping, right? But that was just the way that things were handled in that time frame. Like, I was going to say that decade, but it was more than a decade. But in that time frame, and I think that the explanation of it didn't start coming around until more recently, right? Like, my explanation was like one word per swing of the belt. It was like, didn't I tell, you know what I mean? I didn't really get a real explanation. You know, there's still some things that I did that I don't understand why. I was like, I'm confused. Like, why did I get in trouble? Like, I don't even know what I did. I just know I got in trouble, so I guess I shouldn't do that, but, you know, whatever, or just not get caught. That was one of the things that came out of it. It's like, whatever it was, I didn't understand why I was getting in trouble. I'll just make sure I don't get caught next time. Like, I just, you know, I'm going to do whatever I do. I'm still going to do it. I'm just going to get smarter about how I do it.
That's literally what it teaches you to be sneaky.
Yeah.
And because my mom was the same way. Growing up with a single mom, it was, hands were just flying. It didn't matter. If I did something, hands were flying. She didn't care. And she would tell me, she's like, I don't care where I hit you. Head, body, butt, legs. I don't care where I hit you as long as it's landing. What? And it just shows you like how today talking about self-development is so important, right? Because having self-development and reflection has led to like the conscious parent. So if you're a conscious parent, now it's like, all right, I have to regulate. I have to regulate me in order to address the situation that's going on. Yeah. And I look back at my mom and how things were handled. I'm like, man, if my mom just was able to be alive today, she would understand that these skills weren't there for her, or people just weren't talking about them, right? Because we have the internet. So a lot of great people have come out and blessed us with like these skills and really got it out there on social media. And yeah, I laugh because it's just like, maybe it would make parents reconsider, but then you talk to them and they're like, no, I did it the right way. You guys are soft. These kids are soft. And I get it because I look at the TV or what's going on and I see lots of soft people. I mean, you're in California. Right. We know all about it, what's happening over there. And it's just like a lot of people are really soft. Yes, I agree. That's bad parenting. So if your kid comes out and your kid doesn't want to work, doesn't want to do anything, wants to play video games, not out there in nature. And that's another thing. You and I grew up in nature. Mm-hmm. We didn't have all the video games and systems. It was like, get your ass outside.
Yeah. Well, yeah, 100%.
Get home in the streetlights. Right?
Yeah.
It's like, we had some weird rules. Like, kids don't know about streetlight time. That was a real thing. You had to figure out what time that damn streetlight by my house is going to turn on so I could be home
before
the streetlight.
You didn't have a watch. It wasn't like somebody told you what time the streetlights were coming on, right? Like, you didn't, there was no like time that everybody knew. It wasn't like you, it's crazy. We were almost like nomads, or like we were like wilderness people. Like, we could look at the sun and be like, oh shit, I got 15 minutes, and just take off running. Like, you know,
yes.
The streetlights caught you. It's something. Hands was flying, right? Like, you. It was just a bad scene, and so we were all really good at looking at the sun and figuring out what time it was. Like, that's a lost art.
It's a lost art, and I think that's the problem. Is maybe one step that we do need to take for the children is get them in nature. Like, my son's already been outside 2 hours today. It's what, 10 o'clock? He's been outside 2 hours. A lot of children won't get it. They say like average kids gets 15 minutes a day. What?
Yeah. It's like
I get that walking to my car.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think that's a really good point too, is kids now are getting less outside time than the average prisoner. Like,
yeah,
it's crazy. It's crazy because I think we're a lot of America. When we talk about kids being soft, people being soft, is because we aren't going out and spending time in the world, right? We aren't interacting with other people. We aren't climbing trees. We aren't falling down. We aren't riding our bikes 10 miles away from the house and getting lost. And, you know, we're not in the creek catching frogs. Like, all of those things, like, they mean nothing, but they mean everything. Because the skills that you learn and the things that you do and the creativity of mind. I talk with my wife about this all the time. Is like, movies have gotten really good in terms of like the technology and the things that they can do. But how many remakes of old movies are they going to, like, are there no more good, like, new ideas? Like, they're really creative in like how they produce the movie, and maybe some of the, like, the different tweaks and like the way people are dressed, or the sound is really cool. But how many times can we see Fast and the Furious? Like, how many times are we going to do this? Right. Let's make a new movie. Right. We got the same movie with the same storyline, and I'm going to get killed for this, but I talk about superhero movies, right? Like, I'm not really, my daughters are really big. Well, my oldest daughter is a really big Marvel fan. I think she's seen every Marvel movie, which is crazy. But I tell her, like, I don't really watch them. Only watch them with her. Like, I don't really care. Not that I don't care for them, but it's the same storyline. It's just different characters, right? There's the hero. Yep. And then there's the villain, and the villain is beating up the hero for a certain period of time, and like, the world's gonna end, and then the hero overcomes, and it's like the same thing over and over again. I'm like, dang, there's gotta be another way. That's why I kind of like the whole Thanos thing, right? Like, I'm not a fan of villains necessarily, but the fact that that was a different spin on it, like, the villain won. Oh man, that's crazy, right?
Yeah.
But there's just no originality. Like, how many times are we going to redo the same thing? But I think that comes from, you're just in the house. We're just inside. And you're just like, oh, how can we create a better version of something that's already there? Well, let's just create something new.
Yeah. No, I agree 100% on that. I'm not big on the superhero movies either. I feel like they're the exact same. Transformers, same thing. It's like, dude, it's all the exact same. And I was telling my wife that the other day that I grew up, well, you and I grew up in the generation where music was real, where movies were coming out and they're awesome. I told her, I'm like, you ever seen The Lost Boys? Of course she hasn't. And I'm like, Lost Boys, I watched it, must have been like 3-4 years ago. I'm like, this is horrible now. But when I was a kid, it was so amazing. It was like,
oh,
cool vampires and all this. And music, though, it was funny because we just watched the Wu-Tang Saga. My wife never even knew who Wu-Tang was. And, like, she knew the name and the logo, but she didn't know Wu-Tang. And while we're watching it, I'm like, yeah, I remember this. Yeah, I remember this. because I grew up in that time. And right. Then we watched Tupac, and I was the biggest Tupac fan. I remember the day he died. Like, I was crushed. I cried in school because I was such a big fan of Tupac. It hit me because, like, he spoke literally how I felt. And it's funny because people are like, yeah, but you're white. I grew up in the ghetto in Cleveland. I didn't grow up in, like, a nice neighborhood. I grew up with, so he was saying things that, like, I felt. Right. I had to get out of that neighborhood. That's why I won't go back. I won't ever move back there. It's I grew out of it, and I was happy that I left it. And it's just kids. It's like, we need to make more outdoor kids in this inside world, you know?
Yeah. No, I agree. Talking about that though. So you grew up in Cleveland, right? And then you go to the military. And now you're out of the military and you're RVing. How do you get to that point? Like, how do you get to the way of the wildlings? Like, how do you get there? Because that's very different than inner city Cleveland. Like, that, I don't know how many RVs are rolling around, you know, inner city Cleveland, but no, maybe it's a thing. I don't know.
During the years of COVID, we got a camper van. I said, man, I've always wanted a camper van. I think it's cool watching people. It's small. You can take it anywhere and you can stay places 2-3 days and you can live remotely or boondocking, however you want to say that. And I thought it was cool. I need it. And at this time, I just came from Hawaii and we moved to Washington. And in Hawaii, I lived in the woods my last year, 6 months of the year in the woods. I camped every day because it was like that was training, right? We were training nonstop. It was out of control. And I knew I wanted something that was in nature and I wanted my son to be in there. So when he was born, it was just like that. We had a pop-up camper where we traded in for a camper van. And so we were outside a lot with my son and we just loved it. We were loving the experience. He was crawling all over the dirt. And as he got bigger and was able to walk, he was taking logs and putting them in the fire. We'd make fire together at 18 months old, 12, like from 12 months to 18 months, he was already like learning how to build fires. And he had his own knife so he could help like cut food and stuff there. And it was just, I was loving what was happening. So was my wife. We're like, man, look at him. This kid, it just looked more natural for him to be in nature doing all of this than being at our house doing other things. And don't get me wrong, our house at the time was big. We had a big backyard. So he would always end up in the backyard. It was like he was in the backyard or he wanted to go camping. And so when we retired, we're like, all right, where do we want to move? Hawaii? Nah. Florida? Hawaii is definitely up there, but the cost of living is just crazy, right? Florida was definitely on there because her and I both went to school, universities in Florida. Texas, Mexico, Costa Rica. That's what it came down to. We moved to Costa Rica and we loved it. We had some problems happen with the house that fell through, so we came back after 3 months. And then we started looking in the States. And we just couldn't decide where we wanted to live. We're like, I don't know. I don't want to grow up in an HOA. My son just, like, that's what he understands is the HOA. I think it closes him in. And my wife and I is just like, why don't we just trade in the van for an RV and live on the road for a while until we figure out what we want to do? And I was like, yeah, I like that. And now we've been on the road for 4 months. And it's the best thing ever. We're just absolutely enjoying life. And we've seen a lot more friends. Because they'll stop up wherever we're camping at. And they're just like, dude, you're living the good life. I'm like, it's not bad. You know what? I don't mind being out there. It forces us every single day to get outside. Because otherwise you're cramped in this little box, right? It's like, do you want to be stuck in this box all day? Or do you want to get outside? And we were just in Tampa. And every day, we were right on the beach. Every day he would wake up, go outside, play with bubbles, get a squirt gun, shoot him, go to the beach. So it's just something I think that is so ingrained in my family now is that nature-based play has to be part of us. And there's no better way than RV life. And we love traveling and RV life, again, got us. So I think we got about a year to 2 years of this, enjoying it and seeing the States. And we might take it down to Mexico this winter. So We'll see where it goes, because we want to have 2-3 more kids, and yeah. There's definitely no way we're going to be having 2-3 kids in our RV, but
right.
That's how we got into it. The slow steps that got us here. Yeah.
That's really cool. Like we talk about getting an RV just because we like to travel, and it will be, you know, I think we might actually get an RV because mostly now because of my daughter and softball and having to travel up and down the state, or having to travel to like places like Colorado, instead of flying, we just drive out there and make a whole trip out of it. And so that may happen in the next year or so. I don't know, but we like to camp, and we obviously like to travel. We're always somewhere. We're traveling this weekend and then for the next couple of weeks. So I'm interested. I mean, that's really cool. I don't know if we can get into it like full time like you are though, but we can make a few little trips out of it and spend time. We've rented RVs before. Like we flew to from California to Chicago, drove down to Indiana, picked up an RV, and then drove it all the way back here. So we hit like 11 or 12 states on the way back home. So that was their spring break 2 years ago. It was super cool. Super cool. Like, because I've been to a lot of states. Like, I've traveled a lot with sports and work or whatever. But to be able to hit some of those different landmarks and see those different things, like, we stayed in Yosemite, and we parked. We got there at night. It was snowing. We wake up the next morning. There's a herd of bison, like, literally right outside the door. Like, you go to open the door, and the door hits one. Like, they're literally right outside the door. And it is just like, this has never happened in California. Like, this is not going to happen in my neighbor. And like you said, in my HOA, there's no buffalo rule in my HOA. You know what I mean? Like, so them being able to get out and get those experiences and to see those places, to go to Deadwood and to like see some of those different things that, you know, they talk about in books and movies. I think it was really, really cool and really important. So I like it. I like it. I don't know now. I don't know if I could cram them in. We live there, but we definitely would take the trips.
Yeah. There's one thing I'll throw in though. We are homeschoolers or unschool. It's called unschooling, right? It's kind of let the kid kind of lead you and you facilitate it for them. So that does make it way easier to be full-time RV, because he doesn't have to go to a structured class or anything like that, or daycare or anything like that. So it definitely helps to be that way. And we know it's for a short period of time, 1 year, 2 years. And then we'll probably end up doing something like buying a big lot of land and doing some type of homesteading, have like a hybrid homesteading, nice house, like where we'll have like 2 goats, bunch of chickens, maybe 2 cows and beautiful pool and all that. Right. So it's just like, there's some part of us in big farm. So it's like, we know that's what we want. That's the end state. We're going to be like some kind of hybrid homesteader.
Yeah. So then that, you know, we take care of each other on this farm. That'll be officially true at that point.
Right. On this farm, we all help each other.
Yeah. Yeah. You guys are just talking about it in advance, right? You're speaking it to existence.
Absolutely.
All right. So I had a couple of questions before we get to, you know what? Let's just jump into it. So a question that I always ask on the podcast is, and this is super important, obviously, because the podcast is about fatherhood. And I always get a little bit of a different answer. I think it's because each of us have a different lens on fatherhood and maybe where we're at in our journey and what our experiences have taught us. But I'd like to know from you, what does fatherhood mean to you?
Fatherhood to me means showing up. And really, if I had to just summarize it, that would be it. It would be just showing up, being present, not anything else, just showing up, being there, be there for your kid. And it's probably because I didn't have anyone there for me, right? And so to me, fatherhood is minimally showing up. That's it. Now, what it is to me personally is fatherhood showing up with intentional mindset. So I'm going to show up and I'm going to love my son. I'm going to be the leader of the family. I'm going to be present. So I'm going to give him a lot of my time back. And that's more or less what I would say fatherhood is to me. But definitely showing up is the key. You have to show up. That's step number one, right? We need to be there. We need to be present. And fatherhood, yeah. If it's other things, fatherhood would fall into that love and leadership that I'm talking about.
Okay, I like that. I like that. Now here's a two-part question. And I'll try to frame it so that it makes a little bit more sense to the conversation. So if you wrote a book, right? If you were to write another book, obviously the first one was for fathers, but kind of more about, you know, love and leadership, how to be a leader as a father. I think from what I gather, if you were to write a second book again to fathers, what would that book be about?
Ooh. I would say a second book would be nature-based fathers. It would still be towards fathers, of course, but it would be how can we incorporate nature into our everyday existence, right? So I would want to try to hit the people who are in the big cities. Rural people, you don't really need to worry about. They live nature always. But the people in the cities are stuck in these high-rise buildings and stuff like that. So how can we help those fathers out? And so maybe I'd do something of this nature-based father movement of like, hey, fathers, how can we each day get nature involved with our children? So I definitely think that would be a second book. Yeah, I like that. You might just gave me an idea to start writing again.
Hey, listen, just in the foreword, just a little thanks, you know, no big deal. No, but I think that's a really important thing is figuring out how to bring, like you said, outside inside, right? Or inside outside, right? Bring all the things that you do inside your house, outside your house, like go outside and do them, right? Figure out ways to get out into nature, because the very valuable teacher. Right. It's definitely a compliment to what we do as people. Right. If we can get outside and learn some different lessons and experience some different things, I think, you know, smelling the air and feeling the sun and or the moon or whatever, like just getting out into nature is a super important thing. All right. So this, you know, you got two books now, right? You got Love and Leadership. You got, you know, Nature Dad. And you're now a full blown author, man. I changed you up now. Your full blown career is an author, and so you're writing a third book. But I don't think you're gonna publish this one, right? You're gonna write a third book, but you're gonna keep it private. And this book is for your son. What do you want him to read?
Oh man, you know there's some really good books that I look up to from people like Jocko Willick and his Discipline series. Andy Frisella, he has some really good ones for children with Otis and his dogs and how they talk about also, again, kind of discipline and building the character. It would definitely probably be in that realm. And I'd probably make it more of like a fantasy for my son, because he loves dragons and what's that book? The Ways of the Wildlings. Is it Ways of the Wildlings? No.
Where the wildlings are.
That book. So he loves that, like how the kid's room turns into a forest and he goes through. But I'd definitely do something of a twist where it has more of the disciplines in it and building character traits, right? It's like, or bravery. But like I said, these guys have written some really great books, and I'd probably follow suit on my own version of that for my son. It's like, hey, here. It would definitely have everything that my son loves into that character, though. And so that would be the only changes, is I'd come out with the same storyline almost. Not storyline, different storyline, same results. Building character, discipline, and integrity and bravery.
Yeah. Oh, that's awesome. I mean, those are one, I think the fantasy twist is really cool, because that's going to make it exciting to read, right? You don't want it to be like a just you telling them stuff, right? You gotta kind of wrap it up into a story, and there's lessons to be learned and bravery and all this. I think that's a really good book, man. Like I said, you're an author now. You're welcome.
Thanks. I appreciate that, Ron.
Yeah, man. So now I had a couple things. One, I know I talked to you about it on the live, and you kind of, without knowing it, kind of challenged me to do a mission statement for the family, mission statement, core values, right? So my wife and I worked on it together. And then yesterday, no, 2 days ago, we went and did some stuff with the family, and my daughters were with us. We went out to eat and we kind of went over the stuff that we had, and we talked to them about it, and we kind of put it all together. So you'll see me post probably today or tomorrow. I'm gonna post it. We got a mission statement and 7 core values, and kind of wrote, you know, our thoughts about it. And I'm gonna put it into like a, what do they call that? A carousel post. So each one has its own thing. And it was really cool, man. It was actually a really, really good experience. Like, me and my wife were, you know, kind of coming up with, going through all these different values and which one we thought was important, and we didn't want to have too many, right? Because they all sound really good. But like, what are our really core values? Like, what are the things that we really think are important for our family? And then talking to our daughters about it, and they're like, oh man, yeah, like we love that. Honesty, integrity, respect, you know, courage, you know, all these things that, are really important. What was the honesty? There's like, I know there's 7, and I'm losing like 4 of them, 2 of them right now. But love, just all of the transparency, like all these things are really cool. And I thank you for that, man, because I'm going to figure out how to get it up on the wall in here, like in the office or at the front door somewhere. So it's something that we can kind of remind ourselves of, you know, our values as a family, how we're guiding ourselves, and kind of like our guiding principles and our, mission as a family. Yeah. You know, I think that's something that's really, really valuable, that we can all do, as men, as families, to help lead our family, right. To give them direction, to have some values, like, 'cause I think we all have them, right. But we don't express them in a way that's clear for everybody. And so thank you. I appreciate that.
You're welcome.
Yeah, yeah. It's hard when you start writing it down. You're like, we kind of cheated a little bit, because it'll be like positivity, but what's inside of there might be another value or moral. Yeah, yeah, you know, yeah. It'd be like sneak in, or yeah. Like integrity. Inside of integrity, we also mention honor and empowerment. Uh-huh. It's like we mentioned something about selfless service. You know.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. No, you got to sneak them in there. You got to sneak them in there. Double them up, or you know. Right. But yeah. But as long as everybody can get on board with it, I think it's awesome, man. So I suggest that for everybody, for those of you guys that are listening, you guys that are watching it, make sure that you do that. For the guys that are listening, there's a couple things I want to talk about. One, I saw that you have some mentorship opportunities. And so, fellas, if you aren't already following, let me back up. Let me let you do that. I don't want to mess this up. If guys are wanting to reach out to you, guys are wanting to connect with you, talk about the book, just ask questions or looking for mentorship, how would they go about getting in touch with you?
Your easiest way is Instagram. You could just find me on there as just being dad. Otherwise you can send me an email at fallmentorship@gmail.com. A lot of times I tell people my cell phone number. I'm like, hey, shoot me a text. I don't care. Because, you know, a lot of times people who reach out, we have to see if we have a connection first. I can't just, like, mentor people that we don't have a connection. Because there's some other great men out there that are mentoring and coaching and that are probably more fit for that person's style. Because I go through a body, mind, and soul style where it's like, hey, I really believe that we need to first start with the mental. We need to get strong. We need to build the mind. So the two easiest ways are probably Instagram and Gmail for right now. Yeah. Okay. We'll say that for right now is okay. What I have. My wife's working on some other stuff. She's kind of the web builder in our family, and neither of us are good, but she's making it look good.
Good. I'm excited to see what that looks like. Did you do the guest profile?
Did you follow the guest profile? I believe I did. Yeah.
Okay. Perfect. Yeah. So then all your information will be there. But I also have it in the show notes, and this is for you guys that are listening, right? If you don't see the guest profile, then also check the show notes. I'll have, you know, Instagram and all that stuff, ways you can get in touch with them. But you know, I just want you to go ahead and say it for those that aren't, you know, that are just listening while they're driving or listening while they're working out or, you know, whatever guys do when they listen to podcasts now, cutting the grass, doing some yard work, just so you know, they have an opportunity to do that. Hey, man, look, I really appreciate you taking the time out of your Saturday morning to spend with us, to talk about fatherhood, to talk about your fatherhood journey. Again, guys, if you aren't following them on social media, on Instagram, you're missing out, right? Because like I said, he's having great conversations with guys on a pretty regular basis, which is one of the things I think we miss. It's probably one of the reasons why you're listening to the podcast, is because you want to hear great conversations with dads. And he's doing it like, you know, I'm giving you a podcast a week. He's doing it like 3-4 times. Like, he's killing it. You know, he's doing numbers right now. He's getting the shots up for real. Hey, man, speaking of, you know what you should? You should record those. Well, Instagram records them. So you should download your lives and just upload them to one of these podcast hosts, and it would just be in Dad Podcast.
Yeah, that's actually not a bad idea.
Author,
I like that.
Author and podcaster. Look at that. You know what? When you get your acceptance speech and you're doing like, you know, the New York Times bestseller and number one podcast on iTunes, just shoot me a shout out. You know, shout out to Rob from 4-5 Fatherhood. You know, he nothing long. 100%. Don't go crazy. Yeah, don't let the music start playing while you're saying it. Just a little name drop. That's all.
It'll be like, I appreciate my wife, but number one, I need to thank Rod.
Right? Yeah, man. No, I think that's a really, I was just thinking about it the other day, is the way Instagram works, right? It's like your longer videos don't get pushed on the algorithm. They want, you know, people's attention span is 7 seconds now, I think, the last I checked. And so once the video gets past 7 seconds, Instagram's like, yo, just put that in the back. But I have watched a few of them now, and I'm like, damn, man, this is really good stuff. Like, they're just giving away free game, which is really awesome. And I think podcasting is a way to make it where you have a little bit more control over how people can consume it. I think I use Anchor right now. Really simple way to do it is, you know, upload it to Anchor, and Anchor will upload it to other podcast platforms. So it's anchor.fm. I'm giving them free publicity right now, but I host my podcast on there, so I guess it works both ways, right? But yeah, you should be able to download it from your Instagram, and then you can upload the video to Anchor, and Anchor is now owned by Spotify. But if you upload it to Anchor, you can upload it as a video, and you can upload it as audio. Or you can choose to do one or the other. It just depends on what I think about the video, whether I upload it to Spotify as video or just as audio. I don't know how many people watch videos on Spotify. So I don't know how cool or important that is, but I think you have an opportunity to crack into that part of it to spread the word, because podcasting isn't getting any smaller.
I'm going to definitely do that, because I never even thought about it, to be honest. Never.
Yeah, no, I think it's a great idea.
You know what? I am on one other thing, at Clubhouse. I don't think a lot of men are on Clubhouse. So I have my own room. It's called Frequency Fathers. Okay. And we talk about, it's a fun room. Frequency Fathers is two of my good buddies, Matt and Alex. And sometimes we'll go down the rabbit hole. And sometimes we just talk about like our vibrations with our children and how like we need to keep the frequency in our household positive, you know. And then I did just get invited to the biggest Clubhouse for homeschooling. It's called Honey, I'm Homeschooling the Kids. Okay. And June 20th, I'm going to be running the show. It's kind of like my test trial. I reached out to the lady. I've known her for a little bit. And I said, hey, you know, I got my own book. I have two other dads that are homeschoolers. And we were interested in having a room in your house. And so June 20th is our trial. And hopefully, well, when things go great, we will be a Honey, I'm Homeschooling the Kids father room. And that will be weekly also. So not podcast, but, you know, that open chat type of thing, yeah. like Clubhouse.
Yeah, no, I think, like I said, I think it's really good. You know, you've already got the content. You just got to put it out there, right? So, yeah. And like I said, I thought they were really good, and maybe I'm a fatherhood junkie though, right? I posted something the other day, and I was like, you know, Father's Day for me, especially on social media, is like my Black Friday, right? Because all of this great fatherhood wisdom and all these great fatherhood posts are going to be out there, people are going to be talking about dads and emotions, like all these things about fathers for like free, right? Like just giving it away. And I'm like, oh man, I can't wait.
Yeah, so I know I'm stepping up my game. I'm like, Father Day's coming, and my wife's like, what do you want to do? I'm like, you know what, I don't know, but I know I definitely want to see what these other fathers are doing and saying. Yeah. And hopefully, you know, everyone's stepping up, because that's all I want. All I want is fathers to be better. We can always be better.
Yep, 100%. All right, brother, I appreciate you spending the time with us, for taking the time, like I say, out of your day, because I think we all know how valuable time is, especially when it's taken away or, you know, spent outside of your family. So I really appreciate it. Thank you, man. I'll talk to you soon, and we've got to have you back, right? Once, like I said, when New York Times bestseller, you know, number one podcast in the fatherhood space, and then when you got several rooms in the clubhouse, we got to have you come back on and talk about some of the other things that you're doing, man. And I know there's going to be a lot, so I'm really excited to see it.
Absolutely. Just beginning. Thank you, brother. Appreciate you.
Thank you.
Take care.